Welcome to Who Is She? A Bechdel Test First podcast. For each episode, my Bechdel partners in crime set out to champion and discuss a pioneering woman in film who we think should be on your radar. So today, we're trying something a little bit different. Usually we're Who Is She? Where we profile just one woman who's working in film who we really love and want to endorse and champion. For this episode, we're doing two women. So for this episode, we are looking at the screenwriters of a film called Rocks, which is a British coming-of-age movie. The two women are the screenwriters and storytellers of Rocks, Teresa Ikoko and Claire Wilson. The film is set in Hackney in East London and follows a tight-knit group of teens who try to help out their friend Shola, nicknamed Rox, after her mother leaves her in the care of her younger brother. We're going to play a quick clip from the film and then we're going to come to the slightly tweaked question. Who are they?
Rox, what's P. Diddy 50 Cent?
I want to be like P. Diddy 50 Cent.
Because she's good at
business. Yeah, I want to make a meal before I'm 30.
You've got to think about specifically what type of career. They're in the entertainment industry. Business. Now you're getting there. What type of business?
Makeup.
Give them a discount, though.
Look how much followers she has as well.
Let's keep the highlight, though.
Are these all your clients?
Yeah, she gets paid to do their makeup.
I'm impressed.
So for this episode, we're coming to Caitlin. Caitlin, can you tell me who these two bright and brilliant women are?
Sure. So Teresa is a playwright from Hackney. She's written a few plays, but her kind of first real produced play was called Girls, which was about three girls abducted by terrorists in Nigeria. And actually won her the National Theatre's Alfred Fagan Award, which is granted annually to the best Black British writer. And she's kind of worked on a variety of plays, but also a lot of social inclusion and community engagement schemes, particularly with prisons and sort of other community organisations. And Claire is a writer and producer. She's worked on BBC shows such as The Little Drummer Girl, and she's kind of a big alumni of some of their writing initiatives. She went through a couple of their writers' rooms and programmes. She actually went to film school in Vancouver as well, and is kind of coming on to an adaptation in a few months' time of Naomi Alderman's novel The Power. She's written a few episodes and is also exec producing.
Great. I know there's a lot of Bechdel excitement surrounding The Power, which we
I'm super excited at how that actually visualises on screen. Super, super excited.
And she's obviously the right person to do it as well. Also, Teresa's community work is something that really influences the process of Rocks, which I'm really excited for us to get stuck into shortly. Before doing that show, ahead of the film's release, our very own Karina caught up with the women in their respective quarantine hangouts for a ridiculously fun conversation, I will say. I was very jealous not to be there. So we're going to play that for you now, and on the other side, have a big, deep, lovely dive into the world of Rocks.
So I did love the film, obviously, and I thought, what was so special about it is this big collaboration of sisterhood and just girls working together from the inside and the outside. And I just loved how you all found time and space for each other's talents and each other's stories. So tell us a bit about how you found each other and what your approach was to working as a team. And did you do any bonding exercises? Was it a natural gel?
Well, we were kind of like matchmade, weren't we? So we were sort of chosen, and we very quickly, I think, fell in love, which was great. We knew we had a great rapport on a personal level, and I think we both knew we were getting to know each other while we were casting the film. So that all the process started at the same time. It was going into schools, and I think being around young women of that age and their, you know, the way that they cherish their friendships was certainly something that reminded me of that time. And then also, I think it helped our bond. And then as we began to write together, we felt a chemistry in our writing as well. So it was kind of a perfect mix. Mm.
It's a beautiful, beautiful way to come together. And lucky as well that you got on so well. And you both have quite different backgrounds in terms of your work from stage and TV. What lessons, if any, did you learn from one another in terms of process?
No one works as hard as Claire. So it's like, I'll be like, oh no, I'm working for a couple of hours. She's like, yeah, do you want to meet after? Do you want to do this after? I'm like, no, I don't really want to work for 18 hours today. So yeah, like Claire works hard, like insanely hard. And I think I learned like a lot of work ethic from her about, you know, really, because I sort of kind of fell into this industry. I guess I didn't necessarily have, you know, people say, oh, what's the difference between this experience and other experiences? My one film experience has been Rocks, and it's been great, and for the most part in so many ways. So I very much didn't necessarily know, I don't necessarily have the experience of having like bad, you know, do you know what I mean? I don't necessarily have those bad experiences. So I think what I learned from Claire is how to appreciate the things that aren't usual that that Rocks afforded us, and also to protect them and to seek them out and to vocalize wanting them in the future. So not to take for granted that every experience I have is going to allow for collaboration or allow for authorship and shared ownership the way Rocks did. So going forward, definitely learning to vocalize, vocalize that a bit more. But yeah, she just works so hard. And also Claire's like writes the most beautiful stage directions. Sometimes I'll just be like, yeah, and then they just did that. Like how they did it, why they did it, where they did it. So yeah, so a mix of like personal and craft things I learned from her.
I think Teresa, for me, obviously a beautifully talented writer, but I think in a creative way as well as in a sort of personal way, it was an injection of optimism and bravery. And I think it took me so long to break into the industry, and then I was so kind of grateful for every chance I got that I think I was probably, and I'm you know, my experiences have been good, but I think you can become part of, you can sort of denigrate yourself a little bit as a writer to work for the directors and work for the system a little bit. And then this whole process was so collaborative, and it was all about the voice and finding courage and confidence in your voice. So I think it came at a sort of perfect time for me in my career to sort of inject it again, to be like, you have a voice, say what you want, say what you mean. And yeah, that's what Teresa gave to me.
Beautiful. So across the board, people have said that they've completely fallen in love with the cast. And when you were writing your characters, you must have had, Teresa, I'm aware that you were the first to write this was your story before it became a bigger collaborative process.
I offered the story, but then in terms of the script from the very first draft, it was co-written.
Brilliant. I guess for the both of you then, when you were writing your characters, you must have had quite a specific idea of what your characters sounded like, looked like, felt like. And then you had this audition process where I know that you were looking, the women that you found, the young women that you found, then authored some of the roles that you then ended up writing. But did you have any say in selecting who played which role? And talk us a bit through the audition process.
Yeah, no, it was completely collaborative. Like, we literally had a say in everything from the very beginning all the way up until post-production. We were in the edits. We were in terms of music selection, in terms of the cast, and the cast very much so. So, like I said, initially the story was a love letter to my sister. And it was a story of female friendship. I was born and raised on an estate in Hackney, still live on an estate in Hackney. Me and my sister are Nigerian British. So it was very much culturally and and in terms of community, very specific to my life. So it only made sense. So in terms of like the voices or voices that I knew and voices that I, it was my voice, my sister's voice, my community's voice. And funnily enough, what I discovered as we started to collaborate, as I took the story to Claire and Sarah and Anu Henrique, the associate director, is that actually we share so much of the same voice. So, you know, I talk very much proudly about being from East London, and Claire's originally from West London. And so much of our story and our voice and our experience of being like girls going to school in London overlaps. And even Sarah, who, you know, comes from a very different walk of life from me, you know, similar dynamics in terms of friendship. And we all kind of, you know, our experience of being girls in schools in London and our love for and appreciation for female friendship, there's definitely a shared experience amongst all of us there.
But the girls bring so much authenticity to the role. And how did the script adapt upon getting to know each of the cast members personally?
So it didn't really work in that direction. And I think I'm very vocal about making sure that when we use the word authentic, we're not using it to suggest that the girls are being themselves on screen. Because they're not, they're being the most talented and hardworking, grafting actors you have ever seen. They studied, they worked hard. So it was less about the script adapting to the girls and more about all of us responding to the best story. So because the girls had spent, you know, a year, I'd say, pretty much in rehearsal, in development and in working, they might get on set and something might not feel, and they respected and loved the stories and the characters so much, and they did so much character work that they knew their characters really well. I'd say they knew their characters just as well as Claire and I did. So sometimes there'd be conversations on set where Kosar might say, I know where my character needs to get to, can I try it this way? And it's not because it was easier for her, it's not because this is how she would do it, but it's because as an actor and as somebody who loved the story and was protective of the story and who loved and valued her character, she wanted to give her character the best chance of getting to the place that she knew that Claire and I wanted the character to go to. So we were constantly, it was very alive, it was very fluid, we were constantly responding to what is the best way to get the character to do this thing or to get to this place in the story or for this dynamic to occur.
And I think it's important, like, we trusted the actors' intuition, and you know, they're actors and they're amazing at their job. But I think it's Ken Loach says that your most sort of important or sacred little tool you have on set is the actor's intuition. So when they find a truth, and like what Teresa says, to get there, they have their way of getting there, and that's kind of how they
were. That trust was very bi-directional. Like, there'd be times where, so there's a particular scene that it took a lot of work for Bookie to get her performance, and she worked so hard, and you know, and sometimes we'd be like, you know, to the point where I can't remember who, but would suggest, oh, actually, no, you don't need to make yourself, you don't need to cry, you don't need to get there emotionally. There's I don't know what the tool is that we can, you know, you can put under your eyes. And Bookie would say no. So there was a time where we had to pause set, and she and I sat in, like, you know, in a bathroom for 40 minutes, and she questioned me about the character, questioned me about the scene. She wanted to know things about the character that I don't even know if an actor of 20 years experience would be so intentional, because she was so determined to get to the exact nuance of the emotional place that Claire and I had decided for that character. She wanted to get there, so she sat for 40 minutes and she questioned and she asked and she unpacked and she really unpicked so she would get there. And so that when we say that they worked, like, they really did work. So as much as, you know, we trusted their intuition, but they also trusted our decisions and our script to the point where that they would do whatever it took to get to where we had written their character as, because they wanted to feel it. They believed if we have written their character is experiencing this thing, they believe that the character should be experiencing this thing, and they didn't want to fake it. They wanted to experience the thing that the character is experiencing. So it was really an impressive and prideful thing to.
And were there any other lessons that you would have taken away from this process of working? And is it a way that you have written in the past?
I haven't written like this in the past, because I've written... this form of collaboration has never been something I've been kind of allowed into in a way. And that, even saying that feels like it's not... I'm sort of too grateful in a way. Like, it's, you know, the sort of hierarchy of the way things are made, that the script is handed over and the director sort of, you know, then it disappears. This was being completely part of the process from the start to the end. So no, I haven't worked like this, but I think Teresa said it's more like this in theatre.
Yeah, I have felt, I guess, because theatre is the only place where I've seen something through from conception to production. So in terms of and being a part of all the decision making, I almost kind of didn't expect anything less, to be honest. So when everyone was like, this is amazing, I was like, what was the alternative? Because I was a technical part of whatever that was. And from the very beginning, to be honest, and Claire and I have both said the only reason why we did sign up on this project was because that was the initial promise that we were gonna, and also I would never have given such a important story to people who were gonna run off to Hollywood with it. Like, it was always important that actually this thing that is so important to us was contained in spaces with other people who gave just as much, and who also, not just who would give as much to the story, but who would give as much to each other, which is definitely has been, I have seen happen quite frequently in theatre. So it doesn't happen for everybody in all spaces, but it's definitely a thing that I think is easier. It's a battle which apparently is easier won.
Mm-hmm. And I can imagine, I mean, I've never written a script myself, but I can imagine writing characters and stories is such an internal exercise that you've both probably experienced a lot in all your work. Tell us about the emotions that you feel when you finally see your characters fleshed out on stage or on screen. What's that like?
Just cry. I think the first time we saw the first cut, didn't we? And we were like, oh, this is going to be good. That moment of relief.
I didn't have that experience. Claire has been down for this film from rush one, from first scene, from action. Claire's like, yeah, best film ever made. Top two films in the history of all films, definitely. It's not number two. Like, and I guess for me, I think my first time, funnily enough, that I kind of watched it and was relaxed enough to enjoy it was at London Film Festival. All my family was in the audience. Like, people flew in to surprise me from America and like Spain and like Dubai, and like all my school friends were there. So I felt a bit more relaxed. And I think I had also realized that there's nothing else I can do about it. This film, it is what it is. So I think I was finally a kind audience member. And I like nudged Anu next to me, and I was like, this film's kind of good, isn't it? She was like, girl, I've been saying. Because I think, you know, I'm not easily relaxed. I'm a very, you know, I'm a writer that I know called Somalia Seaton. She once said about plays, like, you know, it's like sending your kids to school naked. And I'm always very anxious about anything I write, like whether it be a draft or, you know, when I first saw Girls on stage, my emotion was not relief or joy. It was terror. Like, don't you hurt my baby. Don't you say she's ugly. Don't you say that she's not clever. Don't you say that this is what she means, when really she's just, you know, she's not, she might not be the brightest, she might not be the sharpest tool in the box, but her intentions are so good. And
yeah,
you kind of just want the world to like give her the benefit of the doubt and give her a chance. So I think I was very anxious for a long time.
Yeah. I read somewhere that after your stage play of Girls, that you didn't want to read any reviews of the first, and you told your friends not to read any reviews. What's it been like, your appreciation of the reviews for Rocks? Have you gone in with the same caution, or have you just been like, yeah, tell me what they are?
I guess because they were good, I was like, also there's too many people involved in Rocks. Like, you can't, like, the Rocks family is a very like uncontrollable, untamable beast. Like, no one does what this book, no one listens to anything that you ask them. So if I was to tell everybody I couldn't tell everybody don't tell me, because someone would have tweeted me or DM'd me or messaged me or WhatsApped me, and like, there are no boundaries in the Rocks family, so it would have gotten to me somehow. But I think once the first review was good, but also I think with Rocks it was different again because so many people were involved. The only thing I cared about really was what the girls and their families thought initially. So when we first did a screening for the girls and their families, I went to the cinema, but I said to them, I'm not going to stay, because I couldn't watch it with them. I was so terrified. I was so scared. And I had that anxiety that I had before with Girls for the whole world, but I had it for just this group of people. And then I said to Claire, if they don't like it, I'm not coming back. And she sent me the most cryptic text after the screening. It was terrible. What did you text me again?
I can't remember, but it was like, they've seen it, come
back.
Yeah,
something like something that. And like I was that. Like, and I called her and I was like, what do you mean? And she knew I was terrified and anxious, and I was walking through the streets of East London, killing time. And so sent such a vague text. I was like, what do you mean they've seen it come back? What does that mean? Are we all starting again? Are we fired? Is this over? Are they angry? Do they have questions? And she's like, no, they love it. And I was like, you should have started with that, mate. Should have left it at that. Should have left it.
Oh. I still haven't read any reviews, you know.
Really?
I haven't read a review of anything I've ever written. And with the Rocks one, I just read the first line and then I just put it away.
Really?
Yeah, because it makes me feel sick. That's where my nerves come in. I feel sick when I do that. Mm. But I know, because I know the film is good, because I've seen it. But I know from everyone else's reaction, if people are just like...
No. Well, that's all the reaction you really need sometimes, isn't it? The actual audience feeling and going to the premieres and feeling how much love there is. And you don't need to really worry about all the... actual reviews, although I might be talking myself out of job. Teresa, you said that you've remarked Debbie Tucker Green as somebody that you really admire. You called her an icon of storytelling. Could you tell us a bit more about what it is about her work that you admire the most?
And what I admire about Debbie is I just think she's just so intentional about like her words. Sometimes like my family struggled, like my sister particularly, like we have sometimes struggled to communicate because I'm like, but is that the word you mean? I don't think that's the word you mean. Here are four other words that mean similar things but slightly different things that I think you might mean instead. And then she's like, okay, yeah, the third one. I'm like, well, then you should have said the third one. Because I'm just like very like, I feel like words are so important. And I just think the way it is for the green rice, I just feel like I can't imagine how you could note her, because I can see that with every word she has. She means those words. Those words are chosen. You know, they didn't just come, they were chosen specifically. I don't know. I just think that her respect and her love for words and the way they clearly love her back is just on a next level. I love the way she portrays Black families and Black love and culture and community just in simple exchanges, these nuances that feel like little treasures that she buries for us in her work. I love how uncompromising she is. It's gentle, but it's tough. It's really everything that I want to be and that I would like somebody to maybe one day say a tenth of about my work, because how I feel about hers, it really does inspire me. I think the first play, sometimes I saw was Brother's Size, but I think the third play I saw was Random. It just spoke to me, and not just about the like a social political climate, but it spoke to me about community and about family and about love in a way that I understood it specifically for me.
Beautiful. You've absolutely nailed a real passion there for her.
passion.
And that. Yeah, I mean, this is the screenwriter that you said that you wanted to be when you grow up. Claire, when you grow up, which screenwriter do you want to be?
I knew you were going to ask me that. I'm like, completely blank. I was sitting there going, "Should I remember anyone? Anyone? Anyone?" Please don't ask me. I don't know. The only name I can think of right now is Wong Kar-wai. I love his movies. So I was always influenced by movies over TV growing up, I think. But I just want to tell big, bold, dramatic stories that are about the human heart and that are universal and relatable. But I'm a big fan of emotional dramas, like almost tipping into melodrama, I think. So those are the stories that I want to tell. Mm.
Could you both recommend a film that you love and think our readers and listeners should be listening to?
Yes. So I was on I judged the Sutherland Award for the London Film Festival last year, and Matty Diop film Atlantics. It was great. I think we watched maybe 16 films in a week, and Atlantics was last. And at this point, I had a migraine and I was tired. And it genuinely, I don't want to be dramatic, but it genuinely poured into me so much new. It felt like I had a blood transfusion watching it. I was like, who is this? Wow. What is this? How is this? Why is this? Why is this not me? Like, it was such a, like, it felt like a celebration of African culture, and a boldness and a dare you to dare me kind of film. And it made me want to work harder, be bolder, try new things. It made me proud. It inspired me. And I just think, I loved it so much, and I felt so proud of her. And she doesn't need me to be proud of her. She doesn't care. She won great things, but I just felt like I wanted. Yeah, it felt like a high five of the film. And
yeah, I am a big fan of that film as well. So yeah, fully on board with that. Claire, have you got a film recommendation for us?
There is a beautiful film called Baby Teeth by Shannon Murphy.
That was amazing.
Love Baby Teeth. Yeah.
That is a gorgeous film. I've met Shannon. She's a wicked woman as well.
Yes, we've had her on a previous podcast. So yeah, she's wonderful. She's
totally fearless. And she's actually directing on a show that I'm working on. That's
The Power
as well. Yes.
Cannot wait for that one for sure. Well, guys, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for Rox. It's going to be such a great film to get out there into the big world, and it's got such a wonderful representation of girls that is just not out there as much as it should be. So we thank you for that, and we'll be pushing it all the way, and good luck for the release.
Thank you so much.
So that was Teresa and Claire speaking with Karina. Karina, this was a very special, very unique creative process that went into Rox. Could you outline that for us and tell us why it was so special?
I think everything about this film has definitely come as a labour of love from so many different perspectives. And that is what makes Rox so engaging, because it's got such an authenticity over everybody's individual story. Yeah, it's coming together to tell one film. I love the fact that the writers were from different backgrounds and different disciplines, from stage to TV. And it, as you heard from the conversation that they had, they both complemented each other in very different ways. And I think that's so lucky in a way, because otherwise, you know, you would think that has a potential minefield for a lot of coming up against each other. But the fact that they both complemented each other, and even in the process of getting the work done, was very different, they managed to get through. And I think that was just really inspiring to anyone that thinks, oh, I can't work with them, or this writer can't work with that writer, or this director can't work with that cast. And I think everything about the success of what the film has portrayed is a testament to sisterhood and clash of talents in a really merry way.
I like that. I like it's also, they're so keen to promote the collaborative aspect of this film. There's no sense of ego amongst the people
Not
that have
at
made
all.
This. And I like that kind of comes through. I know that Sarah Gavron is so willing to denounce her title as this being her film.
Yeah.
That it's...
I think that's it. I think there's a lot of talk about the director being at the helm and their visionary and all of that. But this really puts that to one side and says, no, this is a team effort. This is a group of women, and it is a majority female cast and crew that have come together. And I love that about what Sarah's doing. She's like, yeah, sure, I've directed it, but we directed it. We made this happen. And yeah, love to see more of that.
I think it's definitely a milestone in cinema, because we see, and we'll touch on this a little bit later, but we see this shared ownership between filmmakers and young casts and things like Andrea Arnold's work and Shane Meadows. But this really does feel like such a, like you say, like a clash or kind of a harmony of voices, especially amongst the cast. And I know that they workshop stories with local schoolgirls in schools and drama clubs as well. So there's a real, it feels so pinpointed to location, but in such a positive way as well. Like, there's obviously trauma in the film, there's got to be drama and plot development, but it's also such a supportive and enlightened film. Like, Steph, what did you think about that?
Yeah, it feels like a kind of new version of those types of films, and I guess having a writer that's actually coming from that background, you know, like in Karina, your interview, Teresa was saying this is a kind of a love letter to her sister, and it's like very based on her own life. And I think that is really important in doing a story like that, because you're not just going to kind of go automatically for, oh, an inner city estate, that must be a terrible and miserable life or anything like that. It's like so filled, it has its hardships, but it's so filled with all these kind of moments of joy. And that group of friends to see them kind of going through this film, it just feels so uplifting.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you've all said so far. I think the joy in this film just really radiates on screen, and you can really see that this cast and the crew have become such great friends through this process. It's so lovely to watch that kind of interaction and those people kind of working together. And I also think in a kind of Black British context, it's really important to highlight these stories. A lot of when we think of Shane Meadows, obviously it's much more about a kind of a very different community and very different sort of lifestyle, and it's just really important to give these young stars and these people from other communities the chance to have their sort of moment on screen. But hopefully, I think, you know, this film will produce these star actors in the same way that films like I was thinking of American Honey and Sacha Lane, and obviously the cast from This Is England and films like that. These actors have kind of become real stars from their roles in those films, which I hope happens for Kosar Ali and Bookie Buckray and all of those guys.
That's it.
Those girls are my heroes.
Yeah, they're fantastic, and I fully recommend listening or watching or reading any interview with the girls, and they just have so much love for one another, and they just talk about each other like they're sisters, and now they're just like, now we're family now. That's it, and I love it. And just to add on to what Caitlin's saying, you're absolutely right. This is basically how I grew up. I grew up in Hackney. I grew up in, I went to Stoke Newington School. And, you know, it's funny to think about that moment of my life where people were thinking, oh, poor brown kids, poor black kids, poor kids. When actually we were just having the time of our lives. We were absolutely getting on with it. We were loving it. And no, I wasn't walking around going, oh, poor me. You know, so this film gives me an insight into my upbringing that I recognize, I remember, and yeah, thank God for it. It's brilliant.
I love the idea of young, rampant Karina running around happy, having the time of her life.
Yeah,
there's a scene I wanted to bring up in relation to that happens in the film, and it involves Rox and her new friend. Her new friend kind of draws her into a new world momentarily, and they go to a new build on Old Street Roundabout. East London is notoriously one of those boroughs in London that is full, it's culturally rich, it's beautiful, but it's also vulnerable because of gentrification. And I think that scene captured it really well. She's up in this big vacant flat, she's filming Snapchat there. It's this feeling of aspiration. Like, what were your readings on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, growing up in Hackney and seeing it completely change from one year to the next, it has been quite a culture shock from one year to the next, to be honest. And, you know, and as you step into adulthood and you realise these things actually have a cultural implication into how you spend the rest of your life. So, I can no longer afford to live where I was born. Things like that start to jar you, and then you get angry about it. And you look around, and to me, what I thought that scene was really significant, because it completely took you into a new world, even though it was technically in the same borough. And I think that is what anyone that walks around any area that is gentrified will get. You'll go literally from one street to the next. It will be from one part of the world, owned by one part of the world, to another part of the world. You'll walk in one street and it'll be big high-rises, or another one, it'll be council blocks. And I think that's what was really important about this film in portraying gentrification, regeneration, however you want to call it, but it was really stark. And to see those young people in this big shiny tower block, and even that little glimpse of the kind of people that came in to have a look, to potentially buy it, I think was really significant. It's like, yeah, this is the vision of the people that certain places in London are now being adapted for. And those are the kind of people, as in the young people, those are the kind of people it is pushing out. And it was subtle, but it was significant and very thoughtful in that respect, I think.
I think it has such a good kind of sense of place and like the geography of London in a way that some films that are set in London, like, they'll have that thing where you're walking down one street and suddenly you turn a corner and you're at like Regent's Park or something when you've been in Battersea or like some like random locations. But like, this has such a good sense of like where it is, and it does, I think it makes those kind of jarring moments where they do turn a corner and there's suddenly like these huge glass buildings, or you can see kind of that divide between the kind of like big new high rises and kind of pre-gentrified areas of Hackney. It makes that even more stark and kind of shocking in a way, like that you don't have to do this weird location jump for that stuff to actually happen. Like, you can just turn a corner and you're suddenly in a completely different area.
But what I loved about it as well is that it didn't do the obvious binary that a lot of these films do. The council blocks looked as beautiful as the big high rises, you know, the sun coming in through the balcony. It was gorgeous, and there was such a ray of light over every aspect of these girls' lives, even when they're going through adversity. And I think the location, as with all good films, it is the third character, and they've done a very good job of that.
I think, yeah, I mean, completely agree about all those location points. I think what's also really interesting is the way that, as Beth kind of mentioned, the use of, you know, Snapchat and social media throughout the film, but particularly in that scene as well. It's completely indicative of a world that they're being pushed out from, that still seems kind of aspirational in one context and still seems like something they're striving for, to kind of change their circumstances or kind of, you know, make, to like enter these different spaces and not be restricted from them. And I kind of love that the use of social media in this context seems to be like a reclaiming of those spaces and a kind of way of, you know, making them their own and pulling themselves into those spaces for their own kind of documentation and their presentation of their lives. And it's like, you know, these people want to shut us out from these spaces, but they're ours too, and we can do what we want, kind of thing. I just love the power of that kind of, that power dynamic in that scene.
I never thought of it like that. That's really good,
Caitlin, just to come back, we have touched on what this collaborative approach brings out that hasn't existed before. I want to talk a little bit about, because the characters were so intricately written, and I wondered what the collaborative process might have contributed to that.
Sure. I think, you know, as we kind of said, Teresa growing up in Hackney and having those experiences herself, like herself being able to bring those ideas into the cast and crew and to discuss with people what their lives were like. I remember hearing in an interview about with Kosar, and she was saying how they looked at her own family home to kind of pick up these details and transplant those into the home of the character. And it's that kind of approach that really pays attention to detail, really kind of wants to make sure that everyone is really seen and really heard in their kind of working environment, and that it relates to the lives they've lived and the worlds they've known. And that's what you get when people are willing to listen and collaborate and really talk to one another in the filmmaking process. And these girls really know each other. They really became friends, and I think it's such a powerful way of telling a story about real lives. You know, it's not a kind of made up a situation. These things happen, you know. It's so incredibly frustrating and angering that young girls can be in this kind of situation, but the fact that you know the actors are surrounded by peers and friends ultimately kind of really makes it a really kind of nourishing environment to tell a story like that.
It's interesting to me that it's such a specific story pinpointed to such a specific location and yet feels so universal, which is what all the best made films managed to do. Like, you know, people living outside, people in Toronto, for example, which is where the film premiered, you know, they're going to look at East London and not gauge what it means to be a young person living in East London. But it doesn't matter, because I think that the themes and the unified stance of these girls and their ability to support and look after each other is something that, if you can't relate to it, it's something you aspire to, it's something you want. And I think that is such a powerful, lasting message, which I think is what's going to make Roxanne Dürr like above anything else, to be honest.
It's in the same essence as Girlhood, in that it is just sisterhood and friendship and coming together and looking out for one another. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's interesting that it's screened in Toronto and has a universal message that is able to be picked up by everyone.
I think it's also so wonderful to think about the girls that will see this film and the audience that will see this film in East London and in you know, other London boroughs where these things are, you know, are happening. And you know, even where I'm from in Enfield and went to school in Edmonton, and I, when I first watched this film, I felt like I was back at my school and like being, you know, that kind of, that sort of, yeah, like just friend of these kinds of groups of people and understanding that this wasn't my life, but that this was my community and these were the people around me. And I think it's so valuable for both the kind of people represented in this story and those who have kind of sat on the fringes for you know, their lives or, you know, what their experiences of their community are, to see this film and to understand that, you know, these lives deserve to have, you know, big movies made out of them and shown on big cinema screens. It's just really wonderful to think about the reception this film's going to get. I think that's what's kind of excited me about this film from the minute I saw it.
I think that brings us nicely to our last question. And I wanted to ask you this, Steph, which is, what do you think The Rocks has done for the future of filmmaking? What messages do you think that will send to future filmmakers when it comes to creating their own visions?
I think the process of collaboration, I think, is so important in this film. I think even from that kind of, with our interviewees, like who were writing it, even that being a two-person job, like that really brings this film out from just being a screenplay to being like a film, like a cinematic experience. And that kind of... yeah, process of it being like, it's not the director's film necessarily, it's a group of people coming together to do it. And I think when, especially when you have people both in front of and behind the camera who are invested emotionally, historically in that story, that is something that really comes across in the film. Like, you know that the actors, the writers, they're all kind of, they understand the story and they know it and they're connected to it. And I think that just like really comes across really well in this film. And I think that's definitely something that I would like to see a lot more. It's like, especially in kind of films about working class people, films about city life, that kind of thing. Like, it's definitely something that brings those stories to life a lot more. And yeah, hopefully we get more of that collaborative process. Mm.
And just in terms of representation, I hope this film and everything that it's done in terms of the hype and the excitement and the great reviews, it gives the film industry faith that people want these stories and that they can be universal and that you don't have to be a young black girl to understand it or appreciate it. It's just a bloody good film about an awesome group of spirited young people, and it is for everyone. And I really hope that that gives people faith that these stories can and should be made.
Brilliant. Well, there we have it, a bloody good film, as Karina says. And I think it's safe to say we're really profoundly affected by this film. And please do check out the work of Teresa and Claire if our conversation has stimulated your curiosity. And so that concludes our first episode of Who Are They? Thank you, as always, for joining us. Rocks is out in the UK on the day that this pod is launched, which is the 18th of September. If you feel happy and comfortable visiting your local cinema, please do go ahead and check it out. And if you could join us next week, we'll be diving into the world of Miss Juneteenth director Channing Godfrey Peoples. Who Is She? A Bechdel Test Fest podcast is a Bechdel Test Fest production. It was hosted by myself, Beth Webb, and produced by Steph Watts, with additional help from Karina Antrobus and Caitlin Quinlan. Our music was written, performed, and produced by Zoe Mead. Check out her band Wildest on all major streaming platforms. Like our podcast? Please subscribe and say nice things about us on our Apple Podcasts page.